Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca. And my guest today is Danny Schechter. I'm delighted to have Danny back, and he is so many, many things. He is a media activist, a critic, an independent filmmaker, a TV producer. He's also an author and a lecturer on media issues. Some people call him the news dissector, and that's the name of his blog site. Oh, let me give that to you. Oh, I've got a busy desktop. Danny, let me read just a few things off. The blog site is newsdissector.com. And Danny also has a website, mediachannel.org. I'll mention these again later because there's so much good stuff on them. And you can get on Danny's distribution list and get the material that he sends out daily. Oh, it is terrific information if you want to stay current on the media and what's going on. And the big stories, and we'll be talking about some today in the program, then absolutely follow the work that Danny does. In his words, he covers political, cultural, social impacts of the media. And above all, he provides real stuff, real information unavailable in the mainstream. I first learned about Danny years back when I read a terrific book that I still strongly recommend, titled "The More You Watch, the Less You Know." Eh? How true. And his newest book is titled "Plunder: Investigating Our Economic Calamity and the Subprime Scandal." Danny, welcome to the program.
Hey, Steve. Great to be back with you.
Oh, it's great having you on. So all of that, almost without taking a deep breath.
There you go. All right, now we can say goodbye to everyone. We've gone through my resume.
cover the whole time of the program. And, I really appreciate you coming on because you'll be a traveling man later in the day. So I'm glad I got to you before you took off. But we're both following the same things. What's on the top of your list? So many things I know, but let's get into as much as we can.
I'm most people in the progressive world are totally oriented to politics, and they're oriented towards let's prosecute Bush, let's have a trial, let's put this guy behind bars. He destroyed our country, he destroyed our constitution, and that's their basic outlook. There are so many stories dealing with elements of this, of Guantanamo, of torture, of Obama's saying one thing, perhaps doing something else, and the like. And that's the focus of most of the discussion in the blogosphere on the Democratic side that I can, detect. I'm going it sort of another way because I believe that, first of all, the media in America is our politics. That's the platform of political debate. That's where people get their ideas. That's what shapes opinions and impressions. And unless you examine that and work some perspective about media into what you write about politics, it's all sort of an abstraction to my way of thinking. In other words, in the real world, media is central, and you can't talk about the political system without talking about media. The second aspect of all of this is that we're in the middle of the worst financial crisis, some say, since the Depression, some say worse than the Depression, because the Depression, 70 years ago, there wasn't globalization, there wasn't a way in which a crisis can so quickly become a global crisis.
Let me interrupt because that break means they're going to break away. Okay. Let's take a break, come back, and then you pick it right up again.
Media economics. We'll be back.
Cascadia Public Radio. Welcome back. I'm on with Danny Schechter. Danny, let me throw one thing in and then you pick it right back up again. I'm looking at the Financial Times website. That has lots better information than the Wall Street Journal, Financial Times from London. And the elite story is IBM puts financial losses at I'm sorry, IMF puts financial losses at $4.1 trillion global financial institutions. Well, they keep coming up with these numbers, and every time they keep raising them, and even that number, Danny, is grossly, grossly understated. We don't need to get into that, but the true numbers eventually, if they ever come out, unless they just dump them in the trash, could be many times that number. But
well,
they urge...
know that there's a tremendous amount of risk in the system because of something called leverage. In other words,
and derivatives.
These firms borrowed on the you know, subprime packages they were putting together, you know, up to 30 times. And so, you know, there have been figures of $197 trillion, you know, in outstanding, you know, credit default swaps, derivatives, and other, you know, risks that could implode. And so, you know, you're in a situation where they're trying to stabilize, you know, the system right now to keep the ship afloat, basically. But the ballast is sort of slipping back and forth, you know, in the boat. You know, iceberg comes along and punctures the side. We're back in Titanic wheel. So, you know, this is a, you know, an immense crisis that went uninvestigated, unexamined for years and years and years by our media that looked the other way, by our regulators that looked the other way, and even by the, you know, the so-called due diligence, parts of the investment banks that were supposed to be warning about this, the risk managers and all the rest of this, looked the other way because they were making so much money. And now the bill is coming due, and you know, nobody has the money to pay it, you know, in terms of the tremendous amount of debt in our society, because we live in a consumption and debt economy. And that's what they're trying to revive here with all this money to the banks and, you know, stimulus packages and the like. They're just figuring if they just pump it in something, you know, people will get work, it'll trickle down to the population, and everything will be all right again. But, you know, when you're talking about a structural problem, when you're talking about a systemic problem, it's not so easy. It's not just one quarter you have to worry about. You know, it's moving forward. Can you create a sustainable economy? And, you know, the other economy, the one that has just crashed, is not sustainable. And what they're trying to do is rebuild that economy, and that's not a very sustainable direction to move in. And I think this is the set of issues that progressives have to start worrying about and have to start talking about and doing something about. And, you know, there's a tremendous amount of denial on the left about this. It's too complicated to figure out, et cetera, and so forth. I mean, I just went to the Left Forum in New York. There was a big panel, Nationalize the Banks, it was called. There were five experts there on the panel. Only one was for nationalizing the banks. There was just a tremendous debate about, you know, should we do this, and what are the consequences, and the government can't really manage the banks, and, you know, as if the people who were managing them could manage them. You know what I mean?
Oh, Michael, I know Michael Hudson was one of the panelists. Was he for nationalization?
Not at this particular one, no.
Oh, he was not at this one?
Not at this particular panel.
Oh, I think he was at another one.
Another one. I missed that, unfortunately, yeah.
I would guess he would be for it. My solution is don't nationalize them, close them down.
Right.
Break them up.
That's the whole idea. You know, the whole notion of too big to fail is a failing notion. Okay.
Oh, absolutely. I've got to say one more thing too, because you covered in your book Plunder, you covered the subprime bubble, the subprime crisis, which is a major, major thing, really encompassing the whole housing crisis, which goes beyond subprime. But the worst kind of bubble to have is something like a housing bubble, because it affects the vast majority of people, potentially all of these homeowners. And when you sucker them in to taking mortgages they can't afford because they have automatic resets they don't understand, so they get these cheap teaser rates, and then these rates start escalating, and they simply can't service the debt on their mortgages, and they end up with millions of foreclosures like we're going through now, and consumers are about two-thirds of the economy. You put them on their backside, and the whole economy is wrecked. It doesn't matter how healthy your banks are. These people are in no shape to borrow. They're way over their head in debt right now.
There's no money to borrow. I just got a notice from from American Express.
Well, they're coming in better
since 1981, and they just told me that my credit, my ability to borrow, and I can only borrow $200 now.
$200?
$200. And basically, they've trimmed what I have access to. So, you know, and this follows the Chase Bank that basically talked me into getting an equity loan and now say I can't use it. They've stopped it. So, you know, you're in a situation where actually all of this money pumped into the banks theoretically to get lending going again has not gotten lending going again. In fact, lending is down and remains
down.
They don't want to lend because they need the money to remain solvent. And, you know, there's a big question about whether they can or they will. And, you know, so now we have it moving into the center of all this, the FDIC, which is there to insure the banks, which doesn't have enough money to really insure the banks. And now the government is playing leverage games with the FDIC, because they have some money, so they want it. And, you know, so this crisis is getting more serious. The mortgage situation is getting worse as other types of mortgages, not just subprime, but what they call Alt-A,
mm-hmm.
other kinds of mortgages are now becoming due. And, you know, we're seeing the need for more foreclosures going on across the country, you know, maybe up to 13 million families so far. You know, and we're talking 20 million people out of work. If you're out of work, you can't afford to pay certain bills. You try to postpone them, and you can't use your credit cards. And what happens? Something like 31 million Americans have maxed out on their credit cards. So, you know, we're in a storm here, an S-storm, so to speak. And, you know, it's not going to get any better. And what bothers me is that the political response to this has been largely pathetic. I mean, you know, you have the right out there demanding tax cuts, okay, from an administration that just did give tax cuts, but wants tax cuts for the rich somehow, which is totally insane. And you have the left basically, you know, looking backwards at Bush and Cheney, you know, in the interest of justice, to be sure, and all the rest of it, but not focusing on what's really happening. I mean, the Pulitzer Prizes came out yesterday. The New York Times got five of them.
Mm-hmm.
Not one Pulitzer Prize went to anybody exposing the economic crisis.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, that's interesting, right? Which is another thing I write about, the failure of the media to actually inform us about all of this. And so,
well, you made a big point in your book that you and others were screaming about this well in advance, and you couldn't get anybody's attention.
Well, this is because...
Go ahead.
Yes, that's true. I was considered, you know, a doom and gloomer and alarmist, okay? ABC News just yesterday, I have it in my blog today, you know, did a story called Pessimism Porn. You know, are we addicted to bad news kind of thing? You know, like, don't be a dummy, you know. Don't worry about all this. You know, don't worry, be happy kind of thing. Remember that old song?
So, oh, indeed.
You know, so there's a lot of, you know, people who feel like it's a mistake to accentuate any negatives at all because that just will actually dampen confidence. But if you take the word confidence and take the first three letters, what do you get? Con, you know. And to some degree, we are being conned.
Well, Danny, I think a good analogy would be to compare the economic great distress to a sick person. Now, if a doctor takes the attitude that, you know, I really don't want to dig too deeply into his problem. I want to let him or her know that really you're okay and everything will be fine. Just, you know, take two aspirin and call me in the morning or something. But the secret of a doctor curing a patient is to find out what the hell is wrong and prescribe the right cure to do it, whether it's medication, whether it's surgery, whatever it is. You've got to get at the root of the problem. You've got to be honest about it, and you've got to come up with the right solution. The same holds for the economy. To bury our head, to hide from the facts, and to call people who understand them and talk about them and write about them gloom and doomers, well, my goodness.
They called me an alarmist, but everybody is alarmed now. You know, the point is that, you know, somehow, slowly, the truth, you know, there's an old saying, truth crushed to earth will rise again. You know, the truth sort of trickles out and trickles down and becomes what is initially considered, you know, something that's unthinkable becomes the conventional wisdom. unfortunately, we go through this process over and over again. But I wanted to take up with you, however, Steve, is your view of Obama as a kind of criminal himself. How can you say that?
How can I call him a criminal? Well, at the end of his 100 days, Danny, I have an article all written except for anything last minute I want to add. I will compare his first 100 days with FDR's first 100 days. It couldn't be more opposite. I mean, this guy has allied himself with a Wall Street cabal. I followed him all through the campaign the way you did. I followed his, I wrote about his voting record. I quoted him and what he said. I saw where his funders, where his funding, campaign funding came from. Right at the top of the list were corporate lobbyists and big financial interests. Others as well, but they were right up there at the top. And he lied and said he didn't take money from lobbyists. Well, he took tons of money from lobbyists, so now he's repaying them. All of these trillions of dollars are tax money being used counterproductively. Parts of the stimulus.
I guess where I'm coming from about all this, I think that's probably all true. Okay? But we're in a system that's so encrusted with special interests that, you know, can you really change that system? Even as the President of the United States. And that's...
Well, I'm going to tell you about that when we come back from break. I'll give you a few examples of presidents who did it, at least for a while.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with Danny Schechter. Danny, I don't expect Obama to have a backbone enough to do the kind of things that were done in past times before we ever became a nation. The real cause of the Revolutionary War, I do believe, I can't swear to it, but I do believe, is because the colonists decided that they wanted no more part of the Bank of England. They were charging onerous interest rates, getting the early colonies in debt. So they began creating their own money. States created their own money called scrip. Interest-free, or they could charge low interest. They could do anything they wanted so that the individual colonies could grow themselves free from the onerous debt from the Bank of England. The English bankers wanted no part of this, demanded that they stop doing this. For a time we did, it turned prosperity into poverty and unemployment, and we decided we didn't want to do this anymore.
Well, I hear in your voice, Steve, a voice inflected with the sounds of Massachusetts. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely. I grew up in the Massachusetts,
okay.
The post-Massachusetts colony.
If you remember, as we all should, there was a man by the name of Daniel Shays.
Oh, absolutely.
And Daniel Shays was a Revolutionary War veteran. And after the Revolutionary War, the various soldiers went back to their farms to find that they were being foreclosed upon by British
Indeed.
Banks that were still operating in the colonies. And he staged a rebellion in western Massachusetts. There's actually a marker for Captain Shays in Shelburne, Massachusetts. He's not very well known to the people of Massachusetts today, but he was, you know, a kind of heroic figure who was finally hunted down and killed. But Shays Rebellion is a sign that throughout our history, we've had, you know, a population struggling for change. You know, go back to the Whiskey Rebellion. This was against tax, you know, in the West. I mean, this has always been a country that didn't like the central government somehow. You know, there was a secession called the Civil War. There was a war about that. I mean, nobody likes, quote, big government. But, you know, it's not big government that's dominating today. It's big business, big banks, financialization. You know, institutions that most of us don't see or really recognize and know about, the Federal Reserve Bank, et cetera, and so forth. And, you know, we have to reorient our thinking. And this is why I'm a little concerned about the Obama people. You know, we finally got Bush out of there, okay? And Obama comes in with a message of hope and all the rest of it, you know, which was geared to kind of get people optimistic, and gets confronted with this whole crisis, which nobody talked about during the campaign, the Democrats or the Republicans, really, about what was happening, with the exception of some lines about foreclosure. There was no discussion of what was happening to the economy. They didn't want to talk about it either. And he's, you know, been basically, this ton of bricks is on his head. But, you know, what we don't really recognize, I think a lot of us, is that, you know, we expect somehow the president, because he's in the White House, and that's where power is. Power is not there, you know. Power was Wall Street. It's still concentrated. That's why even this bailout, guess who's benefiting by it? Are the very people who caused the problem.
Yeah, but let me give you two examples. Andrew Jackson, number one, very quickly. The big one is Abe Lincoln. Andrew Jackson was against the Bank of the United States that operated like Wall Street beginning early in the 19th century. He vetoed reissuing of the charter. He called the Bank of the United States a hydra-headed monster. The big one was Abe Lincoln. He needed money to finance the Civil War. The bankers wanted to charge him 24% to 36% interest. He told them to go to hell. We Congress passed a so-called greenback law to print greenbacks. The term still is alive today. It was interest-free money outside the control of what today is the Federal Reserve. Interest-free, instead of paying interest to bankers, we had no interest at all. It financed the Civil War, and it also, until it was rescinded, it jump-started the growth of the economy, Danny. There were lots of terrific things that were done.
No doubt about it, but one of the things about Lincoln and FDR, you know, they didn't really come to power as revolutionaries, but the situation that they inherited, or the situation that confronted them, led them to move more aggressively, you know, in a more progressive direction, okay? I mean, Lincoln didn't want to free the slaves initially. I mean, he was actually quite against it. But as the situation, you know, evolved, the war was not going well at some points, it became a military necessity and you know, what he's remembered for today. Lincoln, see Abraham Lincoln, Lincoln freed the slaves. Okay?
Well, of course, he didn't really free them. The Emancipation Proclamation was only a proclamation. The 16th Amendment freed the slaves.
Right, right. No, I know that, and that's completely wrong. In fact, one of the books honored in the Pulitzer Prize is a book that basically shows that slavery, you know, has continued to the present day, basically.
Oh, indeed.
In terms of, you know, the oppression of poor farmers, black people in the South, et cetera, and so forth. So, you know, but nevertheless, we believed, you know, that Lincoln did, you know, great things, and we believe that FDR did great things, and we know that, you know, he started out fighting the Depression, then he was talked into, you know, raising taxes and balancing the budget in 1937, and the economy went down again.
Oh, indeed.
As he moved to the right. So all of this is to suggest that we have to push Obama to do what we want him to do. That's what I'm saying.
Well, we sure as hell do have to push him. We got to take another break, Danny. Let's do it. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
With Danny Schechter. Danny, I've mentioned it a few times on this program. I agree with my co-host, Michelle Chosudovsky, who is a very, very terrific analyst of world and national goings-on. Big stuff. He really produces some amazing material. I don't know where he comes up with some of this stuff, but he sure does. So whenever he comes up with something new, I always read it. But he's claimed, and I really agree with him, that the Obama program, the Obama economic program, isn't growing the economy. It is counterproductive. He calls it the most counter-growth policy imaginable, because the money is going primarily for three things: to bail out the banks. It will do nothing to grow the economy. It'll simply enrich the banks with many, many billions of dollars. The second category is militarism. That sure as hell doesn't grow the economy. It's to fight foreign wars, to keep the Pentagon thriving, the defense contractors and related companies doing well. And the third category is debt service, which last year was very close to $500 billion and growing maybe exponentially with all these new trillions added to the national debt. We've doubled the national debt in the last year. So I agree with him. I mean, how can this grow the economy? It's killing the economy. That's what concerns me. My goodness.
Well, you know, look, I'm not an economist.
I'm not either.
I'm a writer about, you know, economic issues. It seems to me that, you know, they are trying to exercise powers we haven't really seen exercised before. You know, firing the chairman of, or the president of General Motors. Usually it was the president of General Motors that fired the president, okay? I mean,
Indeed. You know,
the idea of being, you know, they've had a big problem in aside from the questions you're raising, which I tend to agree with, okay? But they have a big problem in, you know, going from 0 to 60. You know, just because he's in there and talking doesn't mean he has the institutional capacity to actually follow through on his own programs yet. I mean, just hiring staff, getting, you know, a team in place, and all of this takes a lot of time. It's not something, you know, that can be done in 60 seconds. It isn't, you know, and I am not shilling for Obama to say that we do need government engagement in the economy, stimulus, packages and all of it take time to actually, you know, you can allocate money, that takes time, then you have to hire administrators, that takes time, then you have to hire bureaucrats, and you have to have people watching the money. I mean, the guy who is in charge of the cop on the beat, so to speak, in terms of the, not just the TARP money, but the other stimulus monies, is saying this is a, you know, big opening for fraud. That, you know, this is extremely dangerous. This has to be watched very carefully and all the rest of it. So even it's like, for example, even if you want to, go, you know, like if you drive from, Wall Street to the top of Manhattan, you know, at 4 a.m, you can make it in 10 minutes or 15 minutes. If you do it at 4 p.m. in rush hour, you can't, you know, there are bureaucratic impediments and all of a sudden, oh, I don't want to hear about all this. I would rather they don't exist. But, you know, you can't judge a program by its goals after it's just been announced, if you will.
I ask, what really are the goals? And I look first at the team that Obama assembled. It really is an outrageous bunch of people.
Right, let's say, Stephen, you want to make this radio show your main thing, okay?
This along with my writing, like you.
Right. No, but this may suddenly you're a great radio host. You're gonna make radio your big thing, okay? And suddenly there are two people who are available to work with you, okay? One of them works for public access in Lower Slavovia somewhere, okay? Who's just out of community college and who's a really good kid, but you know doesn't have any experience. The other one worked for Rush Limbaugh for 10 years, got disgusted with Rush, and is now available looking to do something else. All right? Do you go with the Rush guy? Ordinarily, you would say, what? I don't want to be identified with anybody who's been involved with Rush Limbaugh, but the guy obviously has a tremendous amount of skill because he's helped create a phenomenon in the country. Okay?
Yeah, but people like Larry Summers and the rest of the economic team, these aren't people who got disgusted with the old system, Danny. People are the old system.
No, I get that, but here's the difference, okay? If you want to hire somebody and hit the road running, okay, you tend to hire people who have experience, have run something, okay, potentially, have administrative experience, can get on and they want to get started doing whatever has to be done. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of the people on the left maybe don't have that same skill base. That's one problem. I'm saying he's oriented to let's fix the system by people who know the system, who work within the system, and who have respect from people within the system. Therefore, we can get the cooperation of the banks, et cetera, and so forth, and make this happen. Well, you know, that's a flawed premise.
Danny, I can tell you who my first choice, well, I don't know about first choice, but certainly a top choice, to be my Secretary of the Treasury, if I were the president, a guy who's been on this program a couple of times, an economist, an expert, a former insider who worked on Wall Street. His name is Michael Hudson. I mean, he really knows this stuff upside down, inside out, backwards and forwards.
I know Michael Hudson. I like Michael Hudson. But, you know, Michael Hudson is, you know, identified with, a, you know, kind of a pretty blistering left-wing critique of the system. I like that critique. It's in my new film that I'm making called Plunder, based on my book. I've interviewed Michael, okay? I have a lot of respect for him. But, you know, in a job like this, you need, you know, it's not just like naming your favorite guy. It's who is the Congress going to confirm in this? Who are the interests? You know, we know that Wall Street has already captured the government. You know, Obama stepped into a government that was captured, basically, by Wall Street.
Well, I mean, that happened a long time ago, as
yeah,
we both
exactly.
know.
Exactly. But my point, and this is goes to the point I was raising before, and I know I sound like some kind of reactionary here. I'm not making a case for inaction. I'm just making a case for a realistic assessment of what are the obstacles that people face in terms of trying to make changes that they wanted to change. You know
well,
what I mean?
I understand exactly what you're saying, Danny. You know, I mean, if I were president and I nominated a guy like Michael Hudson, I mean, the media, the Congress, everybody might come down on me like a ton of bricks and make me and Michael both sound like we were Darth Vader and his cousin.
Trotsky's nephew, you know?
Trotsky's nephew.
Treasury Secretary. I'm not, you know, against that. It would be great. You know, I mean, there are people who have had experience, you know, at the International Monetary Fund and have won a Nobel Prize and who have a lot of respect in the industry who could be playing a much more critical role as economic advisors. I'm not disputing that. Geithner, you know, and Paulson, you know, Paulson's people who were involved in the TARP program, this guy Neil, who was part of Goldman Sachs, he's still there.
You know, I think he left and went back, and somebody else is taking his place. The guy who was...
Did he even go back?
Yeah, I forget his last name, but I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
I think he recently left.
Okay.
Maybe he wanted to go back to his high-paying job, I guess.
I mean, I'm sure if you were in there, this stuff is a disaster. It's a mess, you know.
Oh, it's a disaster.
I don't even know how much money they spent. They don't have any, you know, I mean, listen to Elizabeth Warren, the chairman of the House Review Panel on the
Trump. Indeed.
She's devastating about all of this.
She really is.
But she has no power. And, you know, what's happening now is that I just heard that they're naming a bunch of people to help her, you know, which means probably surround her and defuse her critical edge. But she's been fabulous. But she went on with Jon Stewart, and Jon Stewart asked some very basic questions, like how much money was spent, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, she looked at him and said, I don't know. I can't answer that. We don't know. He said, but don't you have something called, this is a very secret document called Excel. Don't you have an Excel sheet listing like where, yes, we do, but it's not up to date or whatever, whatever. I mean, this is total incompetence. And I fear that this issue, when people really get to know about all of this, is going to bring down the Obama government. Okay.
Well, I quoted somebody.
What's going to replace it, Steve? And that's what I'm worried about. Do we want Newt Gingrich back in there? You know, and these other demagogues that just did the tea parties, and Sean Hannity is the minister of information of America. I think it's just a very dangerous situation right now, far more dangerous than the Democrats acknowledge. And, you know, I think we need to analyze this in those terms, too, you know.
Well, again, I understand, Danny, and I know where you're coming from. At the same time, I see very little difference between Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah, but there you go. I mean, look at the Communist Party in Germany. So very little difference between Hitler and the bourgeois politicians. They said, nach Hitler uns, after Hitler, us. we're going to win because Hitler can't possibly do what he's saying he's going to do. What they didn't think about was Hitler was going to eliminate them physically, okay? And I'm just concerned about this idea that the lesser of two evils is still evil, unfortunately.
I see a partnership between Democrats and Republicans, but Democrats are a little softer in their tone. Republicans are an awful lot harder. So Republicans do a lot of bashing of Democrats. Democrats, not enough of Republicans. You know the game.
I agree with that. But what are they saying? You know, what are we calling for? Who's calling for a transformation of the economy? Who's calling for, you know, deeper reform than what we're talking about now? And I don't hear that coming out of many people on the quote left. I don't hear it. You know, there is a group called the New Way Forward that just started organizing on the internet. They got 9,000 people signed up using the Obama techniques that he used during his campaign. Techniques that I document in a new film called Barack Obama People's President that's just coming out. And, you know, what they're doing is they're calling for, you know, breaking up the banks. They're calling for, if it's too big to fail, it's too big to exist. You know, they have a program and they're getting a good response. And, you know, so that's at least a new initiative. But when the anti-war coalitions and the other people went and protested, you know, they had the old laundry list of, you know, 50 different issues, you know, to make a coalition. And, you know, it's reported on, if there's no specificity, there's no clarity about what they really want or what they really stand for, and hence it doesn't really persuade anybody, and that's what I'm worried about.
I'm worried about it too, and I think we both would agree on this. The only way we will ever get real change in this country is from the grassroots, with enough people getting angry enough in big enough numbers that we will force the government to do things that they never would do on their own. It's the way big changes have always happened in this country and in other countries. So
let me try to tell you quickly what I'm trying to do, and I'm really happy that Global Research is carrying my articles, even if not everybody there agrees with every one of them. At least there is some diversity, and it's very provocative. It's a fabulous website for people to visit
and
learn from. You know, what I'm trying to do right now is trying to get my book Plunder out. I've just created a new website called newsdissector.com/plunder, capital P.
Oh,
and
terrific.
On that site, you'll see the teaser to my new film, which I'm trying to raise money to finish, and more information about my book and my articles on economic issues. So I'm trying to do the best I can with all of this. I get invited. I was just at the Al Jazeera Forum in Doha, and Qatar in the Persian Gulf, and now I'm going off to the Arabian Gulf, as they would call it, and now I'm going off to Kazakhstan tonight to the Media Forum, the land of Borat, you know, to talk about these issues. So our website, mediachannel.org, is respected globally, but, you know, it's not clear that we can even survive because we don't have any money coming in. There's no funding for independent media anymore. We're totally dependent on donations and contributions. And so, you know, this is the struggle that we're in, the struggle right now, not just for sustainability, but for survival, to be able to keep our voices out there and have our voices heard. And it's
critical, Danny. What you're doing is critical. Yesterday, Project Censored was on the program. Mickey Huff, Associate Director, another vitally important initiative for the kind of work that they do. It's these kind of things that they really need to be protected, fostered, grown.
So can we get us a stimulus package? I wonder.
Yeah. It wouldn't take very much, Danny. Millions we don't need. They're just crumbs. Crumbs will be more than enough to keep this thing going.
This is, you know, part of the problem is how can... You know, like the Jews years ago, I say the Jews because I'm Jewish myself, you know, created the United Jewish Appeal.
Oh, yeah.
They took all of these organizations, they put them together into a fundraising package. They, you know, did breakfasts and lunches and dinners and fundraising, and they raised a ton of money to sustain what I consider to be, you know, some good service organizations and some organizations I would never support. But the notion of people actually organizing together, unifying in some way, creating some sort of united effort, is missing. Okay, we're all competing with each other for crumbs off the table, you know, with our constituencies. We're not seeing a way to build a bigger platform, and that's something that troubles me. And I, you know, I've been preaching about it. Media Channel, the whole idea of it was to create a website where all these different media reform groups could be together, and you could reach them through a sort of central place to go to. Because, you know, people can't remember every URL out there. And so what happened? A lot of groups signed up. Yeah, we love the idea. Hey, this looks really good. We'll do our own, you know?
Eddie, I think one thing that's missing is a powerful front person like a Martin Luther King. If we had a Martin Luther King leading this battle that you're involved in, and I in a small way involved in, that could be a big difference. Of course,
well,
they go after people like that, and they get rid of them.
I'll tell you this, you know, Martin Luther King, I will admit to having known Martin Luther King, okay? I'm proud to say so, and was actually one of the organizers, believe it or not, which dates me, the March on Washington in 1963. But Martin Luther King had a whole team of people. He had an organization
for
the Christian Leadership Conference. He worked with other ministers. He wasn't just the quote celebrity without portfolio out there just be, you know, on an ego trip. He was part of a movement. He saw himself as a leader in that movement of many groups, SNCC and, you know, NACT and, you know, and other organizations. So there was a united front, if you will, and we're lacking that, you know, today.
Oh, I agree, Danny. I'm thinking of his really unbelievable eloquence. I can't think of any other person I can ever remember who had the eloquence that Martin Luther King had.
Yeah, true, Stephen. But, you know, if you think of the March on Washington, what do people remember? I have a dream.
Oh, yeah, the wrong
but
stuff.
They don't know. They don't remember. This was a march for jobs and justice. It was an economic.
Oh, yeah. Let's just stand against the war.
Okay.
Are we going to take another break? Let's do it. We'll be right back. God, the hour is all.
I don't
just
need to see you, okay?
We'll be right back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back. Final few minutes with Danny Schechter. Danny, I want you to give all your sites again. People can also find just about everything.
I'm like Martin Luther King, Stephen, but I am no Martin Luther King. Don't claim to be. However, I do know that what Martin Luther King was about was a political struggle, a political movement, and that's what is needed, really, today, not just competing organizations, each trying to kind of get the crumbs off the table. Anyway, I'm at mediachannel.org. That's my main site that I edit. I have a blog called newsdissector.com on the site. I've written a book called Plunder, which is available at amazon.com. It's on the economic crisis. It came out a week before Lehman Brothers fell. So I think I've been on top of this whole issue. My more recent stuff is available on a website called newsdissector.com/plunder with a capital P. I'm making a movie about my book. So, you know, I'm a busy beaver. I've also done a film on Barack Obama's campaign, really about how did he win, the techniques that were used, the internet techniques and the grassroots organizing techniques that I think are quite fascinating and weren't really covered in the political race very much. And that's available. That's a new a film that's just out. If people are interested, they can write to me at Dissector. I'm Danny Schechter, the news dissector, hence Dissector, at mediachannel.org. That's Dissector at mediachannel.org, and I'll be happy to get back to you. Would love some reaction to what Stephen and I have been talking about today, because these are really important issues. Please continue to read globalresearch.ca. This is an important website, you know, and the place for investigative articles and original journalism and reporting and analysis that one doesn't find in many other places. And, you know, this idea of actually collaborating across borders, across boundaries, working, you know, with colleagues in other countries is a really important step. And you know, I salute, you know, you guys for doing it and for demonstrating and pioneering that it can be done and sustaining it. So that's where I'm coming from, you know, trying to do the best I can in a very difficult time period using film, using books, using blogs, using writing articles and all the rest of it. But it's, you know, it's doesn't have the impact it really deserves, not because I'm so great, but because we don't have the big networks open to our ideas. And I'm saying this as somebody who spent 8 years at ABC News, was part of the CNN startup, worked at CNBC. So I've worked in the mainstream media. I left it because I didn't feel I could pursue the truth there. And instead, I'm working, you know, in online right now and working in whatever means I can, whatever platform I can get access to, because I think we have to try to reach out to people and educate them and get them open, you know, to a more nuanced understanding of what's going on, because we're in a long-term struggle here. It's not just it's not going to be over this Saturday, you know, unfortunately.
Oh, absolutely, Danny. Another important group is freepress.net, I believe, co-founded by Bob McChesney, who's been on this program. I would just say anybody wants to reach you and forgot what you just told them, they can get hold of me.
How could you forget it? I just said dissector.
Indeed. Oh, indeed.
Aren't they listening? Aren't they awake? Hello?
Anybody can get hold of me. My email address is on the bottom of every article, and I'll tell them how to reach you. But we're out of time, Danny. The band is playing. You got to come back, and we'll continue this.
Thank you. We're still dancing, man. That's a good thing.
Oh, absolutely, Danny. Have a safe trip.
Until the music stops. Okay, Stephen. Bye-bye now.
Bye now. Tune in again tomorrow. We'll have another live good program for you. Join us then.